It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Central Time, USA Today's Paul Singer joins us for his weekly look at the latest from Congress, including a showdown over Homeland Security funding.
First, Governor Scott Walker delivered his state budget address last night, unveiling a $68 billion spending plan for the next 2 years. Here's a little bit of what he had to say.
Our plan is based on growth and opportunity, which leads to freedom and prosperity for all. Secondly, our plan will use common sense reforms to create a government that is limited in scope and ultimately more effective, more efficient, and more accountable to the public.
That plan includes substantial cuts to the University of Wisconsin system and an expansion of the voucher schools program in the state. While those were expected, there were some surprises in the proposal as well.
Here with us now to talk us through some of the major parts of Governor Walker's proposed budget is Mary Spacuzza. She's a state government reporter at the Wisconsin State Journal. Mary, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Governor Walker's highly anticipated budget is out as of last night. He said recently that he wanted to go big and go bold. Is that what you see in this budget?
Yeah, certainly there are some major proposals, some that Republicans are quite happy with, some that they are not. I think the voucher school expansion will have a lot of support among Republicans in the legislature. I think his proposal for borrowing for transportation versus trying to generate revenue is getting quite a bit of pushback from Republican leaders at the Capitol. There have been some other, you know, just kind of maybe not major proposals, but interesting surprises. For example, there are some changes in the budget language on what's known as the Wisconsin IDEA, kind of the overarching vision for University of Wisconsin system.
And that is, I think, the boundaries of the university are the boundaries of the state.
Right, and it would cut out language that talks about the broad mission, including working to improve the human condition, and the language that says basic to every purpose of the system is the search for truth. And instead it would shift the focus to essentially building the state's workforce needs. So that's one of those that it, you know, I think it certainly resonates with people who are familiar with the University of Wisconsin system, alumni, supporters of the university, of just that's been in the statutes for, gosh, I think, I want to say since 1904.
Now, you mentioned a few of the items there, transportation and this language about the university and the Wisconsin IDEA. Can you take us through some of the other big proposals from last night?
Sure. So there is the cuts to University of Wisconsin system. That would be the $300 million cut with a freeze on tuition, but he said that he would grant them more autonomy to make their own decisions going forward, and the tuition freeze would only last for a couple of years. So we had heard more about that. He talked about that quite a bit and actually compared it to Act 10. He said that people were voicing concerns just much like they voiced concerns about Act 10. And kind of, you know, talked about how the state is still thriving and kind of the doomsday predictions did not come through. So that was an interesting comparison. He also talked about his wanting to mandate drug testing for people applying for public assistance like food stamps and unemployment insurance, and said, you know, some people will say we're trying to make it harder to get a job. We're not. We're trying to make it easier to find work. That's clearly going to get a lot of opposition, and other states' proposals have been found to be unconstitutional. So that'll be an interesting issue going forward as to how he tries to implement that and whether it ends up in the courts.
Governor Walker has said he wants to streamline the government, and with that in mind, what are some other areas where the governor is looking to reduce state spending and pare down government?
He's talked about wanting to merge some agencies, merge economic development agencies, for example, into more of one instead of having it be in a couple of different areas. Those would be, he said it wouldn't be affecting kind of the frontline workers as much as the people who are higher up in the agencies. So it's unclear to me so far how much money those cuts themselves are going to save and whether they'll be really, you know, big money savings. Some of the others were cutting tower guards for third shifts from Department Department of Corrections budget, and, you know, it was more like those kind of a lot of minor nips and tucks as we were going through the budget.
Now let's talk education for a moment. There was, as we mentioned earlier, a statewide expansion of private voucher schools in that budget. There's also other aspects of this. What else is on the table when it comes to education?
You know, there's a lot of discussion right now about school accountability, and Governor Walker's budget calls for school accountability and grades. However, he does not call for sanctions for public schools that get, I guess, what are considered failing grades, which is something that Assembly Republicans really want to see. They had wanted to essentially force public schools that are failing to become charter schools. He does not call for that in his budget, but from the Assembly Speaker's comments yesterday, it did not seem like Assembly Republicans were ready to give that up. So we might be hearing quite a bit about that, because the Senate and the Assembly seem to have very different ideas about how to have school accountability.
Some pretty significant changes to the state's Department of Natural Resources are being proposed. What would happen to the DNR under the governor's plan?
You know, it was interesting, because we had not heard, that was not something that we were hearing about in advance in terms of proposed changes. And there were a number of changes that came up really for the first time yesterday, and they included eliminating positions. Some of those were positions that were held by scientists. Some of those were vacant positions, and positions that had been vacant for over a year. I believe it was a total of about just slightly under 70 positions that were being cut, and some of those would be from educator positions and science positions. However, some of those wouldn't all be layoffs, because some of those were unfilled positions that were being eliminated. But he also went at changing how the board operates. So it would essentially, if his budget went through as it's proposed, it would essentially strip the Natural Resources Board of its authority and make it more of a advisory panel. And it would also eliminate those positions, and it would change the stewardship about essentially the state could not purchase land for conservation for quite a number of years until 2028.
Now, not raising taxes has been one of the governor's professed goals. So how does the budget look from that perspective?
From that perspective, he said in his speech that he was following through with his proposal to continue lowering taxes, and he's planning on cutting property taxes again, so that way he would be able to say that he lowered them, you know, continuously throughout his time in office. The cut is not one that people would necessarily call major. It would amount to about $5 a year for a median value home.
The budget also included cuts to Wisconsin Public Broadcasting. What do we know about that so far?
You know, I've been trying to find out about that today, but your ears have probably been burning. So there were cuts of totaling about $5 million over the 2 years to the Educational Communications Board, and essentially it looks like we're still trying to figure out if it would cut all state funding to Wisconsin Public TV and Wisconsin Public Radio, or if the board would be able to restore some of it. They're very hopeful from the executive director of the board. He seems hopeful that lawmakers will not go along with this plan, and that he'll be able to help convince them that this is not something that constituents support. But I think there's quite a bit of concern on part of Wisconsin Public Television's board that this could be a huge, serious cut to how they do business. And it sounds like a lot of fundraising is already happening, and to make up another, you know, $2.5 million a year could be significant, according to Jean Purcell, the executive director.
Mary, what kinds of reactions are you hearing so far to this budget, both from Democrats and Republicans?
We're hearing, you know, as expected, there's a lot of criticism from Democrats on everything from those cuts to public broadcasting to the voucher expansion and possible money that the state's public schools might lose as a result of that voucher expansion. They're critical of the plans for the UW system and the cuts there, some concerns about senior care and cuts that might be happening to that program. Republicans, I would say this is, you know, Governor Walker's third budget now, and Republicans have also been quite critical on different issues, though. I think both Republicans and Democrats have voiced concerns about the borrowing for transportation, and I think, as you've heard, that some of the Republicans said it gave them heartburn and that they were not comfortable with that level of borrowing. I think that Republicans have also voiced concern about the changes to UW system, and that could result in, once the tuition freeze ends in a couple of years, that there could be huge tuition hikes that would make it unaffordable for Wisconsin students to go there. So we've heard that from a number of Republican leaders. And I think that, you know, they're obviously big fans of Governor Walker on the Republican side of the aisle. We have not heard so many kind of Republicans coming out with ringing endorsements of this budget proposal as it is. But I guess that's part of the budget proposal, is that it goes through the legislature and gets changed before it's signed into law.
Mary, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
That was Mary Spacuzza, state government reporter for the Wisconsin State Journal. We'll have more coverage of the proposed state budget later in the hour. Two state lawmakers will join in with their reaction to the plan. It's our weekly look at Congress with USA Today Washington correspondent Paul Singer. Like Governor Walker here in Wisconsin, President Obama released his budget this week, but unlike Governor Walker's budget, many commentators have called the president's budget dead on arrival.
Also, lawmakers continue to go at it over a couple key issues, a Homeland Security bill that would block the president's immigration plan, and the newly Senate-approved Keystone XL pipeline. Paul Singer joins us every week at this time. Paul, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back.
Well, the big news here in Wisconsin, the budget proposal from the governor, it goes to the legislature now. That's going to be taken seriously at the very least. Maybe not the case for the president's budget presented earlier this week.
Yeah, you guys are going to have a great time. You talk about budget, you get to talk about reviewing the budget, probably get to talk about budget hearings and all that stuff. We're not going to get any of that. This bill, the president's budget, is not going anywhere. I mean, the Republicans have said flat out they don't consider this a serious offer. It involves raising taxes, which they don't want to do, and increasing spending, which they don't want to do. And it does not ultimately get to a zero deficit over the 10-year period of the budget either. So it's a non-starter, but it's interesting. Fun to read.
So it's not going to be, you know, passed by the end of the week verbatim.
Well, it might be, but then we'd take the rest of the week off, wouldn't we?
So is it always like this these days, the president's budget? If the president doesn't have a majority in both houses of Congress, the budget is purely a theoretical exercise?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, well, and you know, it's been many years since a budget resolution has been passed anyway until, I guess, last year they finally passed one. So, I mean, it was just the whole budget process was broken for most of a decade. So these really are, I mean, the thing that makes the budget interesting is it gives you an idea of the subject areas that the president is going to want to emphasize and try to push and maybe get some wins. You know, so, and by the way, you know, Obama does talk about spending a lot of money on infrastructure in his budget proposal, which is something that the Republicans have said they would like to find a way to do. He also talks about removing some of the so-called sequestration caps that have affected the Defense Department to allow for higher defense spending, particularly in the wake of what's going on with the ISIS terrorists in Iraq and Syria. So those are things that Republicans would like to, I think, work with him on. But, you know, the rest of the document is a doorstop.
Well, speaking of how we pay for stuff at the federal level, Democrats in the Senate killed a Homeland Security bill yesterday. They're in the minority, but that's how the Senate works. So what was their worry about what was going on there?
Well, and they did it again today. the way the Senate works, indeed. The long and the short of it is the way the bill has been passed out of the House, it funds the Department of Homeland Security, which is good because they're on temporary funding that expires at the end of February. But the Democrats objected because the House attached some amendments that would block President Obama's executive actions on immigration. As you remember, Obama late last year issued an executive order essentially saying that we will not deport 4 million people who are in the country illegally, and they'll be on a path to get work permits. That enraged the Republicans, and they're looking for some way to block that action. The problem is that it's funded by the fees that applicants pay to get the permission to stay. And so it's not actually a federal spending program, and there's it's very hard to figure out how exactly the Congress can get in there and block that transaction. So anyway, the House passed it, the Senate blocked it, the Republicans in the Senate decided to bring it up again today just in case anybody wanted to change their minds. Nobody did. Now it goes back to the House to figure out, well, the House and probably the Senate leadership, to figure out what they can actually do that will satisfy the Republicans and still prevent the Homeland Security Department from shutting down.
Yeah, is this another one of these games of chicken where either this stuff gets taken out or we hit that deadline and there's, I guess, no funding for the entire Homeland Security Department?
That is exactly what it is.
So, but is this gamesmanship? I mean, if this happens, does that mean, okay, border security guards take the day off? Hey, what, the CIA? Like,
no.
All these security things are, like, under this budget, right?
Yeah, no, and the answer is not really. I mean, there have been Republicans, I believe, in fact, Senator Ron Johnson was making this case that look, you know, I mean, even if we shut down, go into a shutdown, technically a shutdown, significant portions of the agency would be exempted from a shutdown because they're national security essential, and so no big deal. They'd still show up for work that day, which is true, but they may not actually get paid for working that day. They may not get paid for their work until after the shutdown ends. It's just not good. And then there would be portions of the agency that still would be closed. And I think by all accounts, Republican leadership want to avoid this by any way possible. They really don't want to, even if it is only sort of a technical shutdown or a limited shutdown or whatever else, they just think it's not good. It's not what America wants.
So one out might be to try to craft, I understand, separate immigration-related legislation, not part of the Homeland Security funding plan?
Right. Try and keep the sort of the hardliners on immigration happy with other opportunities to vote against it. Another possibility is to simply pass another temporary spending bill for Homeland Security for a couple of months and then do this again a couple of months from now. All kinds of, clever tactics. By and large, none of them will probably block the program, at least for the time being. But, you know, again, I think for Republicans, this is a fundamental issue. They believe the president has broken the law, and they want to stop him and express their displeasure.
Now, one thing that looks like is going to make it all the way through Congress, the Keystone XL bill passed the Senate.
Yeah.
But the president says he's going to veto this. So what's next?
Well, the Senate made a couple of little changes, as the Senate does, and so the House still has to give its final approval to the package again, which won't be a problem, I don't think, and they'll probably do that next week. And then what happens is it comes back, the president, we presume, vetoes it. He said he's gonna. And when he vetoes it, then we have to figure out whether the House and Senate can generate the two-thirds majorities to override. The vote in the Senate, the biggest vote this bill got in the Senate was like 62 votes, I think, and they need 67 to override a veto. I don't see where those additional four or five votes come from, so it doesn't look like something that Congress will be able to force the president to accept, but who knows? Maybe Obama will decide, what the heck, let's give them this one. I honestly don't know. I doubt it. They've made every indication that they plan to veto.
Well, some drama there, and some drama going on surrounding Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's speech. He's been invited to speak in Congress. What's the story there?
Yeah, Obama is trying to pursue these negotiations with Iran on preventing them from getting a nuclear weapon. The Israelis and a lot of Republicans believe that he's being naive in trying to negotiate with Iran. Obama said at the State of the Union address, to the Congress, do not pass another sanctions bill that would screw up our negotiations with Iran. Let us keep negotiating. Do not pass another sanctions bill. The next day, basically, John Boehner, the Speaker of the House, said, I'm inviting Benjamin Netanyahu to come speak before a joint session of Congress, knowing full well that Netanyahu has said, please issue more sanctions on Iran. We don't trust them. So now what you've got is, the Congress essentially inviting a head of state to come and publicly disagree with our head of state, and our head of state has said basically he's not going to meet with him while he's here. It just sort of highlights the divisions between the Obama administration and Israel and Netanyahu, it's a sticky wicket for Obama particularly. How do you negotiate this without offending the Israelis completely? On the other hand, trying to stick to his guns.
And some Democrats considering whether or not to show up at all for the speech.
Right, because they are joining Obama essentially in protesting the notion of inviting somebody else to come in and essentially tell the Congress to ignore what the president told you from the same podium 3 weeks ago.
Paul, as always, thanks a lot for being with us.
Yeah, my pleasure, Rob. Talk to you soon. Good luck with your budget.
We've been speaking with USA Today Washington correspondent Paul Singer.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Last night, Governor Walker announced his proposal for the next two-year budget. In his speech, some of the major proposals that he emphasized included ending the enrollment cap for the school voucher program, consolidating state agencies, granting autonomy to the UW system, and a slight property tax decrease.
The governor did not talk about several of his most controversial proposals in the speech, including a $300 million cut to the UW system, $220 million in bonding for the Milwaukee Bucks arena, and cuts to the DNR staff and authority.
During the next half hour, we'll get two perspectives on the budget from lawmakers. In a bit, we'll check in with Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss from Rochester. First, we'll talk to Representative Chris Taylor, a Democrat from Madison. She's a member of the Joint Finance Committee. Representative Taylor, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
So before we get into the details, broad strokes, what is your initial reaction to the governor's budget?
Wisconsin needs a budget that actually restores economic opportunities for Wisconsin families, that creates the jobs of the future, that gives Wisconsin families a raise and gives our children a chance to succeed. And the Walker budget fails to do these things. He created a deficit, a $2.2 billion deficit, at a time when many other states have budget surpluses and are making investments, but because of his really bad choices, he has failed to create the jobs he promised. He didn't grow our economy, and he didn't increase wages for the most hardworking Wisconsin families. This budget fails to do those things that the people of the state of Wisconsin really want us to focus on and do.
Well, let's get into the practical side of what you're going to be doing on joint finance in the legislature. Your party is a minority any way you turn there. Are there places where you think you can work with Republicans to make changes in what you see in this budget?
Absolutely. We will be working diligently to make the changes that we need to fix this budget for the families of Wisconsin. You know, this budget you mentioned decapitates the UW system, our world-class university system, with one of the largest budget cuts in the history of the UW system, which is one of the economic engines of our state and has at least a $15 billion positive economic impact. So I hear concerns from my Republican colleagues about such a huge, serious cut. And so we'll be working on that. This budget doesn't even give our K through 12 children crumbs. No increase whatsoever after already taking, our public schools already took a $1.6 billion hit just a few years ago. And yet Governor Walker expands taxpayer money going to private schools. So we're going to have a long talk about that and why it is that our, 870,000 public school children don't get anything. And yet for some reason, private schools get more taxpayer money, which we think is absolutely the wrong way to go. So we'll be working diligently on those issues. We have a huge transportation funding problem. We don't think the best way to go is to put this debt on a credit card, which is what the governor has proposed. I've heard similar concerns from my Republican colleagues. So there's a lot of opportunities here, and we certainly on the Democratic side are committed to fixing this budget so it works for the people of this state.
Digging into that UW system budget, you mentioned the cuts. The other side of that is the autonomy, the flexibility that university administrators say they wanted. It will provide, the governor's argued, the tools they need to make up a lot of those budget cuts. Is that a worthwhile trade-off for the UW?
Well, the devil's in the details, and we're still trying to figure out what exactly it means to create this public authority. Certainly, we are all on the Democratic side for efficiencies, absolutely. But what our UW system and my own campus is telling me is this does not make up for these very, very serious cuts. And, you know, being more efficient, why is that being tied to a budget cut? You don't hear the governor say to any other agency, we'll only let you be more efficient if you agree to a significant gutting of your budget. It just makes absolutely no sense. If there's more efficiencies, let's make sure that the campuses can be more efficient. But let's not decapitate the system. Let's not hurt our children. You know, I want to be able to send my two young children to our incredible UW system. I hope I'm able to afford it. But honestly, if this proposal goes through, the UW system is, you know, tuition could skyrocket in just a very few years. So this is about making sure we have the best university that we can. We want to be the best. We don't want to be mediocre. It's also about making sure that our kids are going to have an opportunity, our kids right here in Wisconsin, to attend what has been a stellar UW system and to keep it affordable and to keep it accessible to our kids right here in Wisconsin.
Well, if not those cuts, there is that budget shortfall, $2.2 billion if you look at what state agencies asked for, closer to $900 million to continue current levels of spending. Cuts would need to happen somewhere or revenue would need to go up. What would you like to see to close that gap?
Well, I'll tell you again, you know, this is a $2.2 billion deficit that Governor Walker and legislative Republicans created at a time when other states all around us have surpluses. So unfortunately, they made some bad choices. But I don't want to see those bad choices being balanced on the backs of hardworking Wisconsin families and our children who need to have opportunities to succeed. So I think we have to look at revenue creation, which I never ever hear my Republican colleagues mention. We have an opportunity to accept federal Medicaid dollars that will help us under Badger Care cover more people with health care for less than what the governor has proposed. Let's take that $300 million. That would help us close some of the gap that we see. I think we also need to look at some of these big tax loopholes that were created and make sure that everybody's paying their fair share of tax. So there's a lot of things we can do to look at revenue source. But the answer is not to cut these institutions in our state that has made our state great and that give our children and that contribute to our economy here, which we need to get this sluggish economy going. So it's what he's proposing is not the answer. We absolutely need it. We need to look at new sources of funding. And I don't hear that even being considered, frankly, by my Republican colleagues.
Staying on the revenue side, we have higher than average property taxes here in Wisconsin, higher than many states in the country. The governor ran on trying to reduce property taxes. His Republican colleagues in the legislature did so, too. His budget decreases property taxes. Does that make sense?
I'm all for giving middle-income families a property tax cut. Absolutely. We can target property tax cuts in a way that gets them to the people who need them. We don't need to give the 1%, the people in our state who are doing very, very well, whose wages have gone up significantly in the last decade, they don't need a property tax cut. So there's a way to target tax cuts so they get to the people who really need them. And those are our lower income individuals and our middle class families. The way the governor has proposed a lot of, and this is the problem with a lot of the tax giveaways that he has done, is they go to the most wealthy. Well, those individuals are doing pretty well in the state of Wisconsin. We need to help hardworking middle-income families that haven't had a wage increase in decades. We have stagnant wages in the state. It's hurting our economy. I never hear my Republican colleagues talk about getting wages up, making sure we're supporting middle-income families, making sure that we are concerned with increasing their wages. So I'm all for a tax cut that targets the people who need it the most. but the wealthy don't need it here in the state of Wisconsin.
Now, you mentioned transportation funding briefly earlier. You didn't like the idea of borrowing money. There have been a lot of ideas on how to pay for the state's transportation needs. Nobody seems to like any of them. If not this borrowing plan, what would you propose?
Well, you know, I think that Governor Walker should have taken a look at what his secretary proposed on looking at new revenue streams. That's what I hear, and I hear that from my Republican colleagues as well. There were a lot of different suggestions made. They seem to be totally disregarded by the governor, who, again, wants to just put this on a credit card. But I think we need to take a look at the proposal that his transportation secretary made and look at some stable, consistent funding for transportation instead of kicking the bill, kicking the can down the road. That is not the answer. So I actually do think transportation is an area where we will be working very hard to get a bipartisan, long-term solution to this issue, and I'm very hopeful that we're going to be able to look at some more consistent funding streams.
Representative Taylor, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
We've been speaking with Democratic Assembly Representative Chris Taylor from Madison, talking about Governor Walker's budget released last night. Coming up next, we'll hear from Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss.
We just heard from Democratic Representative Chris Taylor of the Joint Finance Committee about her reaction to Governor Walker's budget.
Now Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss from Rochester joins us. Representative Voss, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks very much. Good afternoon.
Well, we'll spend most of our time on the details, but big picture briefly, what's your initial reaction to this budget?
In general, I think Governor Walker has put out a good budget. It's a good place to start. Of course, we're going to make changes to it just like the legislature does every time, but his focus on job creation, balancing the budget, ensuring that we invest in our priorities. It seems like a good place to start for me.
Well, I'll dive into some of the points of potential disagreement. I think you've used the word heartburn, describing the plan to use bonding to pay for transportation, an issue that's been wrangled about for some time now.
Yeah, unfortunately, both Republicans and Democrats for too long have failed to address the long-term structural issues in the transportation fund. We know there's a pretty big deficit in there. We had Secretary Gottlieb proposing some ideas to say, here are additional revenues. I didn't like all of those ideas, but I certainly like bonding even less. We know that right now about 19% of the revenues that we bring in go to pay just for debt service for finished projects. If Governor Walker's budget finishes, I think it'll be almost 25%, which gets to be almost an unsustainable number. So I'd rather deal with the problem now, even making hard choices that we might not like, as opposed to coming back here 730 days from now with the exact same problem but fewer possible solutions.
And we just heard Representative Taylor saying this might be one area where there's bipartisan cooperation to come up with a solution. Do you see that too?
I certainly hope so. I mean, if the answer is to look for ways to solve the transportation fund, I'll definitely work with anybody who wants to reach out and work with me.
Now, the Bucks Stadium funding proposal, bonding, ultimately using public money, another point of disagreement for you.
Yeah, I actually like the idea of using future revenues from the salaries that the players are paying here in Wisconsin as the revenue source. I think that's a great way to do it. My frustration is that, number one, I don't want to use all of the new money to help pay for the new arena. And I certainly believe that just like we have asked the taxpayers where I live in Racine County and those who live in Brown County to pay for the Brewer Stadium and Lambeau Field, I certainly think we need to ask the people who live in Milwaukee, the city and the county, to pony up their share because they're going to get the largest benefit from the economic development and from the actual arena programs that are going to happen there. So I think that Governor Walker's proposal is a good place to start, but there's no way in my mind that we pass this without having a significant local buy-in that we'll have to negotiate over the course of the budget.
If you don't get that and then don't get the bonding, do you worry that the state, the region, loses the team?
Oh, I think we do lose the team. That's why I have been a strong supporter of doing whatever we can to keep the team in Wisconsin, just like we would for any business, especially one that helps us give a high profile for our state. But I also know that if we simply have a plan that says taxpayers need to figure out how to make up the gap, that's probably not workable either. So the team's been great. The Milwaukee business community has really stepped up to the plate, and I'm optimistic that we'll find an answer to keep the team here.
All right, UW system funding, $300 million in cuts over the next 2 years in exchange, a kind of a trade-off for autonomy and flexibility. There's been criticism, including from some of your Republican colleagues on both ends of that plan. What are your reactions to what we've seen so far?
Well, I'm a former member of the UW Board of Regents, so I certainly have a passion for higher education. I think it's one of the key drivers for our statewide economy and to ensure that we have growing incomes over time. But I will say that the idea of giving more autonomy is one I have also supported for a long time. The UW system, in fact, has asked for it over and over to say, free us from the shackles of the bureaucracy of state government and see how innovative we can be. I certainly appreciate that and definitely support that idea. There are some areas where I still think you need public oversight in a way that's more meaningful than just having an authority. I think that the fact that under Governor Walker's plan, they would be able to set tuition increases which would have no limits whatsoever, that's probably something we're going to have to fix because I don't want to ever see a situation where we price families outside the marketplace to be able to get a good education. And I also worry that the magnitude of the cut might be too much to absorb this quickly. But knowing that my number one priority has always been to figure out a way to get kids out of college in 4 years, if they can show me that the plan will not significantly increase the amount of time that kids will take to get out of school or lower quality, I'm certainly not opposed to supporting it, but I want to make sure that those things are checked out way before we commit to that large of a cut.
Now, there are these cuts being proposed. Moving over to the revenue side, we came into this budget with a shortfall, $2.2 billion on the total new requests, more like $900 million to continue current levels of spending is the way I've heard it spelled out. With that in mind, property tax cuts. They're modest, but they're there. Are we digging a bigger hole than we're already starting in, necessitating more cuts?
No, we're really not, because the way the Fiscal Bureau does their estimates, basically what Governor Walker has proposed is a freeze. It comes across as about a $5 reduction, but the way that the Fiscal Bureau will take and figure that out will probably show it's fairly close to a freeze, and that keeps the promise that was made by Republicans when we ran for the legislature and Governor Walker when he won re-election to his second term, that property taxes were not going to increase, and hopefully over time we can cut them even further. So I think that unfortunately sometimes people's rhetoric gets ahead of the reality, but we'll see what the real numbers are once the Fiscal Bureau does the analysis where we know it's nonpartisan. We can all use that to have as a starting point.
And we just heard from Representative Taylor, hey, one opportunity to help meet that budget gap, take the federal Medicaid expansion dollars. Governor Walker hasn't done it. We've seen some of his Republican governor colleagues in the Midwest do it, including Indiana recently. Medicaid's expensive, a big chunk of the state budget. Something worth reconsidering here?
Never going to happen, and let me tell you why. Most of the other states that had Republican governors that chose to take the Medicaid expansion took that money because they were already not funding health care for the poor. Wisconsin, under both Republicans and Democrats, had done really a spectacular job of taking care of people who didn't have the means to afford their own health insurance. So what we've done is we've taken and said, if you're at 100% of poverty or below, it is now entirely a funding program that is the state and the federal government's responsibility. But if you're above 100% of poverty, we're going to have that be entirely a federal responsibility, thus making sure taxpayers aren't on the hook. Now, some have said, well, for 2 years, we're going to have it still be all federally funded. Why not just do that? Because we know in the third year, the state of Wisconsin will begin to pay a portion of that that we can't afford as we try to fund all of the priorities we earlier discussed. I want to fund transportation and roads and an opportunity to have a UW system and a good K-12 education system for every one of our kids. And if the federal government's going to pay for the program, why should we put state tax dollars at risk when we have so many other priorities? So it's just not going to happen on my watch because there's really no need to make it happen.
Well, let's check out the schools. A lot going on there in the budget. Effectively flat funding. There was a request for an increase from the Department of Public Instruction. At the same time, the voucher cap is lifted, could allow more students in the coming years to opt out of the public school, well, their families, I guess, to opt out of the public schools, go into state-funded or state-paid-for vouchers to private schools, ultimately taking money out of the public schools. So is this going to be a hit for public schools in the state?
No, because this is our focus has always been on saying what's best for the children, not what's best for the adults. And if you see a situation where a mom or a dad who's in poverty, because remember, under Governor Walker's plan, it's 185% of the federal poverty level or below. So for a family of four, it's about $40,000, by no means wealthy. If they have an opportunity to say, you know what, the public school is not working for my son or daughter, I want to take that and have the state money, no local property tax dollars, but have the state money follow that child. Why would we not say let's focus on the needs of the child as opposed to the wants of some adults who happen to work in the public school system. So I look at education as one of our most profound things that we need to always focus on. And it shouldn't always be just about the public schools, even though that's the preeminent way that we educate kids. It's where I went to school. I want to think about a new model that says, rather than the building and who pays the light bill, we should be focusing on getting the very best education with the very best opportunity, knowing that every child who gets a good education is someone who doesn't rely on public services and taxpayer support for their lifestyle. So I think it's one where I just wish we could find that common ground, but sometimes people's ideology gets in the way of their compassion, which is really what I think school choice is all about.
But ultimately, the public school still has to pay that light bill. If they're getting less money, if they have fewer students, there are still students in that public school. Do they, those students, pay the price then?
No, they really won't, because don't forget, we've still given an opportunity, and even in Indiana, which has statewide school choice, the vast majority, I think it's well over 90% of the children, still go to a public school, which is why they will still receive the vast majority of our funding. They'll still have an opportunity to go to the property tax to pay for it, and we'll always have that as our primary place for kids to go to school. But remembering, if I want a child who's failing or not doing well in a public school to get a good education, I shouldn't lock them into a failed system because I have that ideological bent. I should say, let's let the parents, let's let the child figure out what works best for them. And ultimately, that makes our whole society more successful.
I should mention that WPR's funding is affected by this next budget item. Governor Walker proposed cutting over 2 years, over $5 million in funding to public broadcasting via the Educational Communications Board, a little bit more probably via the UW cuts. Your take on that?
Well, obviously, we never want to have reductions in funding for something that we all know is valuable. When I have my clock alarm go off every morning, it's Joy Cardine, so I listen to public radio on a regular basis. But I think you have such a strong network of subscribers and people who want to give donations because they like the product. I guess I don't have a problem with the cut because I know listeners will make it up probably and then some because they like what's happening on Wisconsin Public Radio and public television. So I have every opportunity to believe that while the cut will probably happen, I can't see how it won't. I know that listeners will make up for it, and there'll be no change in the service.
Briefly, a non-fiscal note, a change to the UW mission statement in the budget. Effectively, people say striking the Wisconsin idea. Was that something you'd expected, something you'd want to take a closer look at?
No, we've had no discussion of that. And what I would say, Rob, is, look, I like the idea of the Wisconsin idea. I like the concept of having a mission statement. I know that the goal was to say, if we're going to have an authority, let them figure out what their mission is. But if that's really true, let's leave the Wisconsin idea just like it is in state statute. Let the authority come back and say, here are changes to update it, because it's only 50 years old, and you and I know that every 50 years you should look at your mission statement and make sure it's still meeting the needs of society. So I'd rather do it in that mechanism as opposed to having it done in the middle of the budget process without an ample opportunity for everybody to have input.
Thanks a lot to Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and Democratic Assembly Representative Chris Taylor for joining us. More on the budget, including education, tomorrow. That's coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. Coming up after the news, some more perspectives on the state budget proposal. We just heard from two lawmakers, got their reactions from both parties, and now it's your turn.
We're asking you to weigh in on the governor's budget proposal. What do you like about the plan? What do you disagree with? You can call in and share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can share your thoughts on the Central Time Facebook page.
We've covered a lot of ground over the last hour. The budget covers a lot of ground, and you can share your thoughts on what the governor has to say here. Maybe on voucher schools, university budget cuts, changes at the DNR, or how about property taxes, borrowing to pay for transportation? You name it, call in and tell us what you think. You can sound off over at the Central Time Facebook page or give us a call, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234.
Some people are saying the budget positions Governor Walker with a foot in both the state and the national political arena. How do you see it? Call us at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll take your calls. Hear what you have to say coming up after this news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. This is Central Time.